Welcome to part two of our conversation with Cleet Keith about the ghosts of Greystone. The murder-suicide that occurred there, I mean, just the stress, the tragedy, the up and the down that family had of going from things being just wonderful and you got everything in the world to just, you know, crashing and burning, you know, emotionally, you know, with your family just falling apart the way that it did. I mean, you got to think, you know, just beyond just the tragic and the trauma of the murder-suicide, the people lingering in that house for the next handful of years, that would make an impact on the property. So how far back here do stories begin of things happening at the property that can't be explained? When you look as far back as you can, what are the first accounts of somebody kind of raising an eyebrow, or, you know, maybe hearsay of like, well, yeah, it's a spooky old building where dark stuff happened. Every building that's old has those stories. But what are some of the ones that you look at and go, I think this might be the start of the true stories of things that have happened or that are happening that can't be explained?
Yeah, it's a good question, because remember, I always think about, did the murder suit, because there is a portal within the home. And we know that because there was a man named Peter James. I don't know if you remember him. He was a psychic medium, very well-known psychic mediums on shows and all that stuff.
Sure.
He showed up one day and he came inside the house. Steve Clark, who was a senior ranger there, he came inside the house with Steve. And he was walking around and he looked up and goes, oh, do you have a portal here? Steve goes, no. He goes, yeah, you've got a portal right in this corner. So, and then, 15 years later, I go inside with Chris Fleming. Do you know who Chris Fleming is?
I know the name.
Yeah, so Chris Fleming is a well-known psychic medium.
Okay.
Who's been on Ghost Adventures and all these other things. He showed up. We became friends. And when I walked him, he pointed to the exact same area that Peter James said. He goes, do you know you have a portal here? And I went, wow, okay, so there's a portal here. Now, did the portal open because of the murders? Did that shock and crazy energy open that portal? Or was that portal already there? And did that help stir up the energy within the home that caused the murders? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. It's just a thought that I've always had. And when I talk to other people, and people for the book, I did tons of interviews. And when I did that, that would always come up somehow.
Sure.
Talk about that with people in the know of that property. So I could go back. So I don't know if things were happening with Lucy and this her new husband. I don't know if things were happening while they were living there. That's never known. That there was... We don't know. I'm pretty sure it's true because it was told by several people, but that there's a solarium on the second floor, and Mrs. Doheny, Lucy, would go out there as the sun was going down with some friends. They were kind of into psychic things and all that stuff. And there's a design on the marble floor there. They said if you stood in the middle of the star as the sun was going down, they did some kind of ritual thing, whatever, you could feel whatever. I don't know if that's true. I've heard it from several people, so I'm guessing it is, but that probably didn't help, I'm guessing. We know that she was into psychics, probably trying to reach Ned or something like that. Mm-hmm. But are those rituals and things opening that portal, bringing things in? There are also other suicides within the home on the property. So is that fueled by that night of February 16th? We don't know. But what I can tell you is in doing the research and talking to people that actually know of the location, the earliest one I found was back in the 60s. And so that was from a ranger that said to me that he was told this personally from a police officer that back in the early 60s, none of the cops liked to go to that mansion. So if there was a call, nobody wanted to go. because it's just the place freaked him out. And you've never been there, but I don't think you've been there. Have you?
No,
been there?
I have not. No.
Okay. So if you're there during the day, it's like, wow, is this the coolest? Look how beautiful. The sun starts to go down. Oh, it's so awesome. Look how that looks like. It gets dark. You go, let's get the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. So it changes quickly. And these officers never wanted to go there at night. Well, there was a call that the alarm had gone off in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, two or three cop cars had to go up there. They didn't want to go, so they all went together. They went up and they parked up right by the entrance up there. And they got out and all the lights were on inside the house. Now, there wasn't the electricity in that home isn't supposed to work. Mm-hmm. So they're going like, well, it must be a film crew has turned on the lights.
Sure.
So they go up to the front door and the cops are looking inside going like, what the hell is going on in here? Open the door, go inside. The head cop says, you guys go upstairs. You guys go down to the basement. You guys go to the first floor, see who you can find or see what's going on here. As they start to look around, things go bad. And suddenly their radios start to go to the white noise. Mm-hmm. Suddenly the lights, just like it's almost like an EMP, like an electromagnetic pulse. Mm-hmm. Their cars, as cops always do, their cars are on outside this mansion, right? They're still on. The ignition is still on. All of a sudden, everything stops. The cars go out. All the lights in the home go out. They're there with their flashlights, and the flashlights go out. You had guys down in the basement, and back in the 60s, the basement was horrifying because it was just junk and crap everywhere. It was a place to store things and throw things. It's now cleaned out and a lot better. But back then, you had to crawl around things to get all the way to the back to where the electrical panels were to see if anybody's back there. Mm-hmm. And these guys are in there now without a flashlight, without any lights, and it's pitch dark. And they're panicking. And they're cops. And they're climbing, freaking out. Everybody in the home's going, what happened? They're trying to get, there's no lights.
Yeah.
And they all finally, the cops get out of the basement, freaking out, run up to, they get, hey, they're yelling at each other. They run up, they get to the front door, and they get out of the house, and they jump in their cars that start up immediately once they're all out of the house. The cars start up again. They jump in those cars, and they left. And the ranger told me that the cop even told him, because the cop was there, even told him, I don't even think we locked that front door. We all just ran out, jumped in the cars, and got the hell out of there. Mm-hmm. That's the first story I ever heard about the mansion. That's the earliest story I ever heard. And then it goes on from there to like into, I think the next one's like into the 80s. And so I don't know what happened. And the other thing is, a lot of times people don't want to talk about it. It's almost like what happened to me when the thing shattered. I never mm-hmm. talked to her about it again. It was just like, you know, now let's pretend that never happened. The police are notorious. They never want to talk about it because they don't want to look, in essence, weak in manner.
Sure.
How they dealt with it. There was a woman who was a ranger that worked there, had things happen to her. Her father was a cop back in those days, like in the 60s and 70s. And he was inside that house. I think he was in the living room. And back then, they had police officers stay the night if they were filming.
Okay.
They didn't hire security companies because there really weren't security companies in the 60s. Like, so they had police officers just stay. Mm-hmm. And this cop was inside the house walking around. And he was standing inside one of the rooms at night, and the curtains, all the windows are closed. The curtains blew out toward him as he's standing inside the house, and he snapped because it was impossible. And he ran out of the house and locked it up and left. And so when I talked to her, I said, is there any way, would you get a hold of your dad? I'd love to talk to him about that. She came back, says he doesn't want to talk about it. I said, I won't use his name. We won't talk about it. What he, you know, what happened to him specifically, like, yeah, is his name. He would not talk about it. She goes, Clay, the best I can do is I'll tell you his story. He will not tell you the story. And I went, wow, that's crazy. Okay. So that I know took place. I had another another guy who is a district attorney now, and he was in the house in the 80s when he was walking down, I hope you don't hear this outside, he was walking down the stairs from the second floor to the first floor with this other female ranger, and she was pushed and flew down the staircase and landed at the bottom of the case. Could have died, could have killed herself. And he was right there with her when she suddenly she just took off and flew. And he helped her out of the house. She went to the police station, filed a report, and quit. And I said, boy, I want to talk to this guy. I won't say his name.
Yeah.
Steve Clark contacted him because he told Steve the story. And he says, I don't want to talk about it. He goes, well, you told me the story. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to. And so we got a hold of him and said, we won't use your name. We just want the story. No, enough. Don't call me again. Because they don't want to be maligned with ghosts and stuff. He's a district attorney, sure, out here.
Yeah.
So, and there's another cop who is in the book, but he said, I want my name as anonymous police officer. Do not use my name and I'll do it. I said, okay. Okay. So it's back then in the early days, I don't know. That's the only story I heard about that then, that of someone who came forward. Everybody else is retired or has passed. So I didn't get any other stories, but it starts to pick up in the 1980s.
It's so interesting because what it seems like whatever is there doesn't really want anyone else to be there. And yeah, and it makes you wonder, then you kind of go to the questioning of, well, who is there? Is this the spirits of those who died? Is this Hugh and Ned, or is it someone who had committed suicide on the property? Or is it something else, because others do believe that there's a portal on the property? Based on the hundreds of interviews that you did with people for the book, what's your conclusion? What's your opinion on what is, in fact, haunting the Greystone?
Well, we, like you said, we know that Ned and Hugh passed, and they're still there, by the way. And I know that for a fact, because I went in one night with another buddy of mine, Dan, who's the senior ranger today. He's up there. He runs it. And we went in with the spirit box. I thought it was a crock.
Sure.
I bought one of them. We were laughing about it. I said, let's just try it. I don't know. Let's just try it.
Sure.
So we got a spirit box and the EMF meter, the K2.
Yep.
And went inside the living room one night. And I said, here's my recorder. And you've got the K2. Let me turn on this little spirit thing. I turn it on and it's doing one of those things. And I said, is there anybody here with us? If there's somebody here with us, see this red light. If you come toward us, could you let me know who's here? Is there anybody here? Ned, clear as day.
Yeah.
Ned. I went, I look at Dan. I go, did he just say Ned? And Dan goes, I think he did. So we continue on. And I say, would you do that? Would you say that again? In a different voice, Hugh. And I look at Dan, I go, oh my God, they're still here.
Yeah.
So this is like, you know, so they died in 29, and this was probably 2007 or 8 or something like that. So they're still there. There were two maids that committed suicide within the home. And so this gets back to, remember I told you that she married this other guy, a financial advisor?
Yes.
He wasn't a good guy. So, not just my opinion, when you know what happened, mm-hmm, he ended up basically raping these maids.
Oh, God.
So he's sneaking around at night. He's the master of the home. This is, remember, back in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Has his way with these maids. It's a Catholic household. The maids are Catholic. They're mostly from Europe. They're British, Irish, mostly Catholic servants. Mm-hmm. And they get pregnant. And so one who was pregnant hung herself in the servants' room, which is now the break room for the Rangers, oddly enough. When I was there, I recently retired. So she hung herself in that room. And then there was another maid that was pregnant that slit her wrist in what we call the meat locker. It has a drain in that meat locker. And she did that so her friends who worked there wouldn't have to clean up after her.
Wow.
So, and that's true.
Yeah.
Because a woman showed up one day, an older woman showed up one day, and Steve Clark, the senior ranger, was there. And she wanted to know if she'd go inside for a tour. And Steve said, we really don't give tours. And she said, oh, a friend of, I think it was a friend of her mother's, was the one that slit her wrist in the meat locker. And Steve is like, oh my God, we didn't know if that was like ranger folklore or, and she goes, no, she slit her wrist in a meat locker. So you have those spirits there. And I went into the break room one morning with my iPhone and said, turned on the recorder and said, why are you here? I know that there's someone here. Why are you here? Is it because you're afraid to find out what you're going to see when you cross to the other side? Turn it back. Are you afraid to find out what you cross the other side? Yes. So that person is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And along with, in 2003, I was working there and a guy showed up and went to the Willow Palm, which is right outside the firehouse, which is on the property right next to the mansion. And he sat on the bench in where the koi fish are, and he took out a gun and blew half his head off right there. And I went there and saw it. So I think he's still in the property as well. They've seen a dark shadow out that way, moving across into the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
The place is nuts. And all that activity, along with, like you said, along with the portal, there is a demon in that home. And I went up and doing the interview for the book, was talking to this one ranger named Chan, and we're up in the attic. And in my interview with him, because I like to bring people back to the area in which they had their experience, because it really lights them up again.
Sure.
And I brought Chan up into the attic. I was talking to him. And when I went back to do the transcriptions for the book, I'm listening to Chan talking to me, and I hear another voice. I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. I stop it. I go, that was just Chan. And I said, wait, who's this? It's another voice whispering, and it says, go ahead, get out. So that's the demon. And it's a demon because Chris Fleming said to me one day when he showed up that day, I played him this recording that I have that is like altogether about 8 minutes long of the real meat of the recording. And you hear, it's a crazy night. You hear the alarm of the building was messed up. So it's going beep-doop, beep-doop. Mm-hmm. That's going, there's an owl outside hooting. There are helicopters going over the property, but through it all, you hear a little girl going, then you hear a deeper voice going, and a scream. It's so horrifying, I can't tell you. And that goes on and gets worse and worse for about 8 minutes. And then suddenly, boom, it stops. So, and when I played that for Chris, he said, that's the demon I was talking to you about.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from the attic to the basement. And Steve Clark, the senior ranger at that time, had a horrifying thing happen to him down in the basement. So we know that that was the demon down there. So you've got all these things taking place, along with an open portal that allows spirits from, it's like a ghost highway. It allows ghosts to come in and go out of this specific location. So any ghost can come in and go out. So you don't know if they live there or if they're just coming in to check the place out. It's nuts. It's crazy.
Just an opinion-based question here. When you have a location like this that has so many things going on in it, is there ever a way to truly calm it down, cleanse it, let it be what it was intended to be, a place of happiness, a place of peace? I mean, originally it was intended to be a family home, and then tragedy struck, but now it's been stained and marked so much. Is a place like this just always going to have these things going on in it? Or can it find peace, as a piece of land, a piece of property? Can these energies ever be calmed down in a place like that?
Excellent question, and you bring up another point, and that is there are also spirits on the land. Mm-hmm. So it's not just in the mansion, it's on that property. So are those spirits from Indians back in the day that had it way back in the day? Mm-hmm. 1700s, 1600s? Or did they not put a curse on the land, but did they do a ritual there that may have brought in spirits? It then became Mexican land. Did the Mexicans leave some kind of ritual on it that cursed the land, or just whatever their ritual was? Mm-hmm. That we don't know, because things have been seen on the property itself, which we can go into later if you like. But point being, I contacted at one point. Now, we had ghost adventures, ghost hunters. Everybody wants to go in there. Mm-hmm. And the city will not allow it, because they don't want it to be known as a haunted location. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, the book wasn't a good idea as far as they're concerned, I'm sure. I was waiting for the repercussions from that. But, you know, honestly, anybody could have walked in there and written a book about the place.
Sure.
Right? If you're visiting Greystone, you could have gone like, wow, I hear this place is haunted, and do interviews and call people and find... I just happened to be there 22 years, so I knew the ins and outs and everybody that worked there. And they would say, they turned me on to another friend who worked there, rangers, whatever. So anybody could have done that. But I eventually, at one point, got a hold of Dead Files, because, do you know that show?
Yes.
Amy Allen, I think, is like ridiculously great. So I thought, man, if I can get them to come out here, and Amy can walk through this property, we'll get the truth. We'll find out the real truth of what took place here. Mm-hmm. And then she can say, here's what you can do to help this property.
Yeah.
Well, I left a message on their Facebook page, what have you. And about a month later, I got a contact thing from them saying, hey, Cleet, here's my number. I'm a producer on the show. Call me. Mm-hmm. I called this. Now, I said in the Facebook thing that I put in there, would you be interested in going into an iconic location in Beverly Hills that is extremely haunted? That's all I said. I didn't say Grayson. I want to talk about, I just want to see if they would be interested in that first. Yeah. Without saying, hey, it's Grayson.
Yeah.
So I get a call from the producer, and she's like, there's some interest. Could you tell us what the location is? I said, I'd rather not tell you right now, but I'd rather just talk about it if you have interest. She goes, is it Greystone? I said, yes. Because it's like, that is the iconic location. Yeah. That's haunted in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to play the game. I just said, yeah, it is. She goes, I kind of figured that. She goes, I just want to make sure it was Greystone. I'm going to talk to the other producers and we'll get back to you. They get back to me eventually and they say, we are interested. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, let me talk to my higher ups. So I went to the guy who was the head of the community services division of my department and said, hey, we have an opportunity to have this company come in and she can maybe even help with the property, this and that. And he said, absolutely not. We don't want to draw any attention to this place that it's haunted. We're trying to do weddings and events and bullet point presentations where suddenly somebody takes the bullet point thing and moves it around. We can't do that. Let's not go there. No. So I had to get back to him and say, I'm sorry, man. I thought we would be able to do it, but we can't do it. So can you cleanse this property with the right person and the right know-how? You probably could. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how much salt you would need for 18 acres.
In theory, I mean, that's just a question is like when you have, you know, all those different things coming from different places and, you know, different types of energies. It's like at some point, are these buildings just kind of like, look, you can leave it and you can learn from it, but it's never going to be, you know, spirit free or what have you with a location like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that's the case with Greystone. I mean, I've had other people come in that said, we're going to do a cleansing, this, that. Okay. And they sage and this, that, but it's still active. In fact, one of the rangers, I'm no longer there, but they're all my buddies, and got a hold of me probably about 3 weeks ago and said, hey, I got to tell you, I go, dude, I'm not writing any more books. I can't. It took 3 years to write this book. And at one point it was over 700 pages. And the editor called and said, you got to stop.
Yeah.
We can't put out a 700 page book. Okay. It turned out to be 520 pages anyway, but I still get calls from the guys that are saying, I got to tell you what happened. I said, okay, go ahead. I'm not writing them down anymore because I just can't do it. I can't keep up with it. But there was when they did the arraignment for the officer in the George Floyd incident, mm-hmm. the city of Beverly Hills hired a lot of security to just be around the city in case something broke out, whatever it might be.
Sure.
So they hired a private security company to come up to Greystone because they had their all their vehicles up there. Mm-hmm. That's where they basically staged up on the top parking lot up there. So they hired a private security company to oversee their private security company cars. So there were two guys in the top parking lot. And what I was told from my buddy who's a ranger up there was that one of the guys, it was at top parking lot, 2 o'clock or whatever at night, and he looks over and sees this white mist at the far end of the parking lot that looked like a woman in a white dress. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what the hell is that? And he gets out his flashlight and says, hey, and starts over toward that mist, turns to his buddy and says, hey, come here. He goes, what? He goes, come here, look. The guy goes, what the hell is that? I don't know. The guy runs over. They start running toward this woman who's floating up the staircase that's at the far end of the property. And they're watching her, and she makes a turn and just dissipates. And that was like 3 weeks ago. It will never end. That location has so many spirits that are coming in and going out. And that woman, if it's the same one, has been seen. I had one of the interviews with another ranger whose brother was a security guard one night during filming, said that they saw a woman in white on the property walking or floating. I don't know what they said. I can't remember. But going like, well, who is she? Where'd she come from? And they go, well, we're not supposed to have anybody in the property. Oh, look, then we got to tell her to get out of here. And they go around the corner and she's not there. So she's been seen along with I can't tell you, man, the other things that have been seen in that property that aren't that are not human, are there.
Yeah.
So I don't think you'll ever clear it, is what I'm trying to say.
It will never end.
Yeah.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Cleet Keith about the ghosts of Greystone. A big thank you to you for supporting our program and keeping us on the air. We could not do this without you. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.